for WGTD News. I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show is next. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Jack Andrea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911. They may be closed, but they have not lost their hometown spirit. Visit jackandrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, and mugs. The Morning Show is next.
And we welcome you to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. For Christians around the world, this is Holy Week, leading up to the dramatic events of Good Friday and then Easter. But for Christian churches around the world, and for that matter, for congregations of all religious types, these are extraordinary times with the COVID-19 crisis, necessitating social distancing in so many places and the shutting down of so many public gatherings. In the wake of this, I reached out to four members of the clergy here in southeastern Wisconsin to find out how their particular congregations or parishes were coping with the COVID-19 crisis. My thanks to Father Ricardo Martin, to Pastor Bradley Brown, to Pastor Susan Patterson-Sumwalt, and Pastor Levi Kettleson for being part of today's morning show. I'm spending the next few minutes of this morning show with Father Ricardo Martin, who serves Sacred Heart Catholic Parish on the north side of Racine. And Father Martin, I appreciate you making time for this conversation. We welcome you to the morning show.
It's a pleasure, Greg. Thank you for having me.
I wonder if you could tell us first about your own reaction to the initial announcement from your archbishop for archdiocese from this part of the state, which first began limiting public worship in Catholic churches in the archdiocese. What was your own reaction to that announcement?
Well, my own reaction is very much shaped by the fact that I'm from Barcelona, Spain, and in Spain the crisis started like 2 weeks in advance of what we're experiencing here. As you know, people have been following what has happened in Italy and Spain. So when the crisis began coming to this part of the world, I was kind of ready because I had seen what had happened in other places. So then the Archbishop issued a number of statements. The March 16 is when there was the final suspension of public masses. And I wasn't surprised. Actually, I was glad that the Archbishop took this very strong leadership on helping people realize that faith is very important to us, but health is also very important, and we have to find new ways to do the same thing we were doing, but making sure that we are not putting people at risk.
I wonder if you had a significant number of parishioners who were upset by the Archbishop's announcement and in a sense had to be persuaded by you and others that this was a wise course of action.
Yeah, I haven't experienced this much at my parish, but I know other priests who may have, and I hear things from other places. I also work in the Archdiocese. I'm the Vice Chancellor of the Archdiocese, so I get to work also in a more general setting. Here at Sacred Heart, the reaction of our parishioners has been wonderful, and I'm serious. I'm not being. People know I'm not very diplomatic, so if the case would be otherwise, I would tell you. Here, it's been very good. I think people may have experiencing grief also, and when we feel grief, we sometimes may need to get upset about something. And obviously, I suppose some people have felt the sadness of losing something that was part of our life, a very important part of our life for some of us. So, but here at Sacred Heart, it's been a very good reaction, I have to tell you.
So explain what the response of your particular parish has been and who has been involved in shaping Sacred Heart's response to this in terms of what you have chosen to do in terms of worship and other online offerings to members of your parish?
So we were very, we realized very quickly that we had to go online. So, so that you know, on March, that Saturday, what Saturday was that? The 13th, 14th of March, I was buying hand sanitizer for the first time. And that same weekend, that morning, I believe it was, if you could help me, March, the Saturday, March 14th, we were installing cameras in church. We had some experience broadcasting talks and doing things technologically. A conference we had in June was broadcasted for the first time. So we only needed to extend a little bit more the installation, and we were, thanks to the person who installed all this for us, we were able to do the same in church. So we immediately saw that we had to go online. And what we are doing is to do Mass every day at 10 a.m., which is the time we chose in the middle of the morning to allow people to be ready and everything. And then we've been doing Mass every day from Monday to Sunday, the whole week. During the day, weekdays, we do it in with Facebook Live, very simple, in the small chapel where we do weekday Mass. And then on Sunday, we use this system I'm telling you about that was installed on March 14. But we were familiar with it, so it was an easy transition. Mm. That's about what we are doing online. Then some programs that we were doing, we moved them online also, like we were doing something called Alpha. That is a program that many parishes have experienced. It's an international program. So we moved that online. And then what I started doing out of the blue, but that has been very good for us, is that I chat every night at 6:30 with my parishioners or friends of the parish or people I know from other places do connect as well. And from 6:30 p.m. to 7 p.m., I have an informal chat with parishioners. We talk about things, we organize. For instance, yesterday we learned that St. Monica's nursing home needed face masks, so we organize a group of people who can do that, you know. And then an informal chat, just to check, and I explain what I do. I explain they ask me about my opinions about things, and I give them freely. I think that's what we are doing, more or less. Yeah. There is the administrative aspect also. We have to organize a crisis group, and lay people are helping us to make decisions.
Your weeknight chat is something that a member of your parish had told me about. Is that set up in such a way that it is two-way? I mean, where members of your parish can, for instance, give you questions or offer you feedback, or is this kind of in one direction, you to them?
Nothing I do is in one direction, even when I would like it to be. So it's Facebook Live, because that's the easiest way to do it and for people to connect. And the only difference is that I have the audio and they have the chat. So they can write questions or comments or everything. So I think it's two directions, certainly. But everything in the life of a priest is two directions, even if we think it's not.
Here is the last question. I am recording this interview with you actually just ahead of Holy Week. By the time this interview airs, it will be the middle of Holy Week. And so you and the members of your parish, I'm guessing for the first time in any of your collective lives, are facing the prospect of Maundy Thursday and Good Friday and Easter Sunday not being able to be together in the common sense of the word. What do you think this is going to mean for you and for other Roman Catholics? And do you see any possibility that this kind of Holy Week, celebrated under such strange circumstances, can still be meaningful or might even perhaps be uniquely meaningful because of these strange circumstances?
I think it will be uniquely meaningful for me as a presider or as the priest, but also for our community. And we've seen these days a resurgence of faith and a focus and an engagement that I had not seen before. So I expect the same for Holy Week. So you know, part of the experience of any person's life is to adapt to the circumstances, and we are just adapting and finding creative ways to one of the things we've said is that we have the same mission we had, this parish has the same mission. The church has the same mission that we had before this happened. So Holy Week will be the same. We will do the same thing in a different way. And I think people will be more focused. I think the meaning that Holy Week is a plethora of significance that is trying symbols and words and prayers and everything. And I think it will have a deeper meaning. We have experienced this at Mass these days. Every prayer, every reading comes with an extra layer of meaning. So I expect the same for Holy Week.
Mm. Father Ricardo Martin serves Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Racine. The website, by the way, for their parish is sacredheartracine.com. Father Martin, I so appreciate you taking the time for this conversation. Thank you so much. Very best wishes to you and to all the members of your parish.
We Greg, we have friends in common, it seems, and anytime you need anything, the friends we have in common, Frank and other people we have in common, it's the best presentation card you have with me, so anytime.
I appreciate that. Thank you again. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I wanted to include at least one country church in the mix, and so I reached out to Pastor Bradley Brown, who serves North Cape Lutheran Church, which is a country church located in the town of Raymond. And I began our conversation by asking him to describe some of the first conversations that occurred at North Cape around the COVID-19 crisis.
Well, I think for us it started to enter our awareness that it was going to impact our church around the beginning of March, when people started to think about the risk that contact would have with each other. So I think the very first thing that we changed was how we passed the peace. During our worship service, before we share Holy Communion, we have a very vibrant way of getting out of our pews and shaking hands and hugging each other and catching up with each other and just celebrating community. And about the first or second week of March, we encouraged people, if they didn't feel comfortable, to use a different form than handshaking. We did the elbow bump and we did the fist bump, and some people just did a little wave. So that was the first adjustment that we made to our in-person worship. And then in the middle of March, we started hearing more from health officials that this was going to require the social distancing practices. And what happened in the middle of March is really sort of a ground-up movement in our congregation. Our essential church staff, our office manager and I, and our musicians got together, and we started thinking about how we could deliver some content online. And we started small with some recorded sermons and a worship outline, and it's grown from that to include recorded music that we're now syncing to a movie format, so that an entire worship service can be recorded and people can follow along at home.
Is this something that involves, I should think it does, kind of the combined expertise of various parishioners, because not everybody has the wherewithal to know how to even begin to create these kind of things?
Yeah, it's really an example of, you know, what Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians about we are the body of Christ, and the really wonderful thing that we're experiencing out of this is that we are able to kind of reconnect people through their gifts, through the use of technology. And so that's been a great learning experience for us in the midst of all, you know, the uncertainty and the fear that we have around us. For sure, everybody's contributing a little piece, and none of us are experts in the whole picture. But when we come together, you know, we put something together that we hope meets the needs of our parishioners and our community, and it seems to be getting a good response.
So how is it then, for instance, that the members of your congregation are accessing these pre-recorded worship services? Is this through your website that people can click and view, or through other means?
Yes, we try to deliver it in a number of different formats so that it's accessible to people. We have a link on our website with all of our recorded pieces, including some music and that people have recorded and actually composed themselves. We have an email blast that goes out once a week that has a link to the worship outlines and a link to YouTube, which is where we store our recorded sermons and other recorded elements of worship. And we also use social media, mostly Facebook is where we connect. All of these things are pieces of technology that we'd used in the past, but now we are learning to connect them together. So,
what is it like to deliver a sermon with no congregation there to hear it, I mean, directly face-to-face, as would typically happen on a Wednesday night or a Sunday morning? What is that like for you as the person crafting the sermon and delivering it in this really uncommon sort of fashion?
Yeah, it's so much different than what I'm used to, being in front of the congregation and being able to see their response and reactions. I joked at one of my last sermons that the hardest part for me is I don't know if anybody's laughing at my jokes. That's not always unusual with my own children, but I usually at least get a sympathy laugh from somebody in the congregation. So I said that in one of my broadcasts, and thankfully people made comments on Facebook like, yeah, Pastor Brad, you made me laugh. Mm. But it might be they're laughing at me instead of with me, but hey, we need that levity in our congregation.
Do you feel like you're crafting your sermons in a different way, given the fact that they're being delivered in this very different sort of format? I mean, if we looked at the transcripts, I mean, aside from what I'm sure are references that you make to this current situation, otherwise, if we read a transcript from one of these sermons right now versus a sermon from a year ago, would we have a sense that this is a different sermon delivered because it's going to be received in a different format? Or by and large, are you really trying to deliver exactly the same kind of sermons that you always have?
Well, I think I'm trying to stay true to my regular style of preaching, but the fact that the technology is part of our social distancing, I think form does impact content. So there might be a tone of a little bit more formality because of the lack of human response that you would get in a live environment.
Mm. And do you deliver them from the pulpit in the sanctuary, or are you actually recording these, in a sense, in a more intimate setting?
I started out at the very beginning recording them in my home, and I'm fortunate I have some beautiful leaded glass windows, so I had some nice backdrops, and I would wear my clergy collar so that I would look the part of a pastor. But I don't tell people what kind of pants I'm wearing underneath. We all know that's one of the jokes of these days. I can say I finally was able to deliver a sermon in jeans. I did get some feedback that people, they really appreciate the church itself as a reminder of the sacredness of the time that they set aside for God. And that familiarity of that scene where they're used to going every week was very important. So the last couple of weeks I've been going back to church and I've been preaching from the pulpit. Been my own videographer, and that's presented some challenges. I think maybe my camera angle is a little bit off, but it's good for people to, you know, to be able to see their sacred space. And we actually do have a plan to go around and do a presentation on each of our stained glass windows. You know, I've always felt as a preacher that sometimes the Word of God comes when people's imaginations trail off from something they've heard from the preacher, or when they're looking around and they're seeing the art and they're contemplating what that means. So I want to provide some of that for people through electronic media as well. So like I said, we're going to do a feature on each of our stained glass windows to maybe even educate people in a new way of what symbolism is there and what the meaning is, and to help them feel like they're back, you know, in their pew. Lutherans like to have reserved pews, so we need some of that, you know, comfort of what we're familiar with, sure. And I hope to provide some of that.
I noticed on your website that there was the possibility, it says, coming soon, of virtual Sunday school. And, of course, it's important to remember that the displacement that all of us are experiencing right now is not just being experienced by adults, but by children as well. Do you have any sense of what virtual Sunday school is going to be like or look like?
What we've started to do just on the ground level is to provide some lessons and artwork that parents can do with their children at home. So that's the beginning of what we're attempting to do. And then we do have some ideas of having some of our Sunday school teachers do a little video recording so that they can reconnect with the kids that are so important to them, and to reestablish those relationships. I think that would be the next step that we're looking towards.
A last question. This interview is airing in the middle of Holy Week, which, of course, for Christians around the world is a very important time of the church year. And it's, of course, strange for people of any religious faith, but particularly Christians at this particular time, this is probably especially difficult. That is the timing of all of this. What do you think can be learned and gained out of a situation which, of course, in so many ways is very unhappy and also very frightening? What would you say are some of the lessons that we can draw from what we are experiencing right now?
I think on the positive side, it's really opening up the possibility for us to remember that our Great Commission is to share the good news of Christ and God's love for all people. And a lot of what we're doing now is providing materials through the use of technology that can have a much wider reach than just, you know, speaking in front of a limited gathering of people. So I think it's helping us think a little bit differently about our core mission of sharing our love and our resources with people throughout the whole community. And I also think on the flip side of that, I think we're learning how important it is to have human community, to be in the physical presence of one another, because Christianity is very incarnational. It's a story about God becoming human in Jesus Christ, and the Holy Week makes that even more profoundly real to us when we think about the suffering of the human life that Jesus takes on. And I think on the other side of this, you know, just like on the other side of the crucifixion, there's the resurrection and there's the bodily resurrection of Jesus, we're going to appreciate even more what it means to care for each other physically, emotionally, spiritually, in a very real, human, connectional way.
Pastor Bradley Brown serves North Cape Lutheran Church, which is located on Highway 45 in the town of Raymond. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And we'll spend this portion of WGTD's Morning Show with Reverend Susan Patterson Sumwalt, who is senior pastor at First United Methodist Church in Kenosha on the corner of Sheridan Road and 60th Street, a congregation I have some direct acquaintance with, most directly because of Fine Arts at First programs over the years, including the Sing-Along Messiah that has occurred in this beautiful sanctuary of First United Methodist for many, many years now, and other connections as well. And Reverend Susan Patterson Sumwalt joins us to talk about the ways in which this particular congregation is trying to cope with the strange circumstances of the COVID-19 crisis. Pastor Patterson Sumwalt, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning. And it has just been great, the wonderful ways that you have been connected with our congregation.
So what are your recollections of the very first conversations that occurred between you and your fellow pastor and other leaders of the congregation when it started to become at least a real possibility that your congregation and its work and ministry might be directly impacted by COVID-19. Do you remember what those first conversations were like?
I certainly do, because I think at that time I really believed that it would be shorter lived than what we find ourselves in today, and trying to just kind of get over a week by week basis rather than thinking more long term.
So the way your congregation is set up, who ultimately makes decisions regarding whether or not we will worship together, and if we can't, what we will do in fact? I mean, who has been responsible for those kind of decisions?
Right now it has been myself, and then I have communicated and talked with the other pastor, Pastor Justin Elliott Lowe, as well as the staff, and sharing it with some of the leaders of the church, and then the congregation as a whole.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what it has been like to create at least some online worship experiences for your congregation to access via the wonders of the internet, and how that has taken shape for you.
Yeah, it has been quite interesting, and it's been a learning experience for ourselves. First United Methodist Church, we don't have a lot of technology, or that technology really is at the center of our communication, whether it be worship or meetings. And so it really has been trying to figure out how we go about doing that with what we have. And so we began by thinking we could post worship on Facebook and our website, and found that didn't quite work. And so we did worship last week on Facebook Live, and starting on Palm Sunday through the month of April, we are moving solely to doing worship online on our website. And so we have found some ways to put that together and find that more people can access our website than they can be connected through Facebook.
As you have put things together, what kinds of things have you thought about in terms of what works well online versus what kinds of things just cannot be recreated in an online format versus what might unfold on a typical Sunday morning?
Well, I think, online, what we can do is be connected in new ways through worship. So we're doing daily devotions, and that we're doing worship pre-recorded online so that people can access it and so that we can put that together. Of course, the piece that's missing in all of that is that worship, and particularly preaching in our tradition, is a conversation and is an experience of the moment between the people who are gathered and the person who is the worship leader. And so having to kind of rethink about how we are gathered in new ways without having that physical, kind of reaction, and give and take through worship and preaching is one of those new experiences. We've been trying to create community in other ways of worship. our children, which has just been really heart-touching. Their Sunday school classes meet by Zoom, and to be able to jump in and hear them read the Bible and pray and laugh with each other has just brought me great joy. We've created some prayer groups and fellowship groups and have committee meetings through Zoom and Google Hangout. So we really have been working at new ways of how we pull ourselves together and remember that we are the church, even though we're not able to go to a specific building or place.
Hmm. What is your sense of how many in your congregation do not have either the resources, I mean the technical stuff in their home to access technology and or the know-how to really kind of understand how any of this works? I mean, how significant a segment of your congregation are we talking about? And what are you doing in terms of trying to continue to minister to that particular population?
Yes, that's been a change, too, because at least 25% of our congregation does not have technology. And so one is I've been writing a congregational letter so that everyone receives the letter because they don't have email. We have been working at phone calls. We've put together teams to call particularly those who are homebound, but calling others in the church just to check in and see how they're doing. Children are making cards, and those are being sent to people. There are note writers that are busy writing notes just to check in with others. So we're trying to, in traditional ways as well, reach out to the congregation and in some ways have a more personal touch than we have in the past.
The decisions that you have made in terms of what to do and how to do it, have these largely been left up to you and the other leaders of your congregation versus kind of a higher church body? Are they giving much in the way of direction and guidance, or by and large in the Methodist Church, are these kind of decisions left for each congregation to determine for themselves what's going to work best for them?
Well, the United Methodist Church is a highly connectional church, and so, you know, I'd say there's two parts of that. One is the decisions that we make as a local congregation, you know, really have been left up to us. But those whom we're connected to, the hires up, so to speak, our district superintendents and our bishops, have been in constant communication with us, offering us, you know, options and possibilities, sharing best practices, giving some guidance as, you know, as they work with state leaders and federal leaders. And so there is a great deal of support that we as local churches receive from the denomination, you know, just short of, you know, telling us, you know, making decisions for us.
A last question. This interview is airing in the middle of Holy Week with some of the most important days of the Christian church calendar nearly upon us. I wonder if you have any thoughts on what it feels like to be approaching these important moments in the church year under such strange circumstances.
It is, and that certainly was an attitude adjustment for me, and everything that we've planned has changed. Just to say that all of that, you know, which I love and has been part of tradition, and we plan for congregational members and for the community, is all different because of what has happened with COVID-19. But what I keep on trying to stress is that Holy Week, being able to walk for Christians, you know, with Jesus during this time, and I know that for the Jewish community that it is Passover as well and Ramadan, is that those experiences and moments in our Christian year and Christian life still happen. regardless if we're in a building or not, that those ways of being together, of remembering, of connecting to our faith, of growing in our faith, to be able to receive strength from our faith, to be able to hear those words of hope are, you know, have never been more important. And so we all are just trying to find new ways of being able to connect with each other and to live and tell that story.
Pastor Susan Patterson Sumwalt is senior pastor at First United Methodist Church in Kenosha. Thank you so much for your time. Best wishes to you and to your congregation.
Thank you so much, Greg.
We finish out today's morning show with a pastor from Journey Church. Those of you who live in Kenosha have surely seen Journey Church on Highway 50 close to the interstate, which is a church of the Assembly of God. I'm going to be speaking with Pastor Levi Kettleson, who actually serves the Burlington campus of Journey Church. So tell us, first of all, at kind of the outset of all of this, what kind of conversations took place at Journey Church in terms of how to proceed, depending on how all of this was going to unfold, and if and when the circumstances would necessitate kind of a ceasing of normal operations. What kind of conversations took place there?
Yeah, I think like everybody, we were trying to figure out the timing and what would happen, not knowing what would happen with this virus, how much it would spread and the severity of it. And so our early conversations were, if we are asked to stop meeting, and in our Burlington context, we meet at Dyer Intermediate School. And so we were talking with the school district and they were informing us of, hey, if the governor says we need to shut down, if we need to do school online only, that's going to affect all of our outside groups. And so for us as a Burlington campus, we were having that conversation early on as well. The school district here in Burlington has been a great host for us. Our campus meets at Dyer Intermediate, and we've been doing that for about a year and a half now. And so we've got a great relationship with them. And it was, hey, what do we do now? We've been hosting a lot of our services online at jrnychurch.com. And so we have an online presence already. We've been active on Facebook and Instagram and a lot of the social media outlets. And so we kind of were having that in our back pocket, saying, hey, if this happens, if we're unable to meet in our campuses, our different sizes. So it started at, like, I think it was, what, 500 and then 250, and then it kind of went lower and lower. And so we just decided to make the call as our leadership and as the government said, hey, we can't meet anymore together, then we said, okay, well, we have this platform online. We've already got a lot of systems in place. Now we realized how good or how bad they were. and that's what it forced us to do, is to look at how we presented online and the social media outlets. How could we encourage? How could we engage with our people? We've always had the mindset that the church is not a building. The church is the people. And the gathering is a key element of us being the church, but we're designed to be in a relationship with God and with his people. And so we were trying to figure out, hey, how can this social distancing not isolate us from God or from God's people?
Hmm. So I noticed that Journey Church offers up not only worship services, in virtual worship services that people can experience at home, but a fair amount of other, let's call it, programming that shares what you do and continues many aspects of your ministry. Just give us some sense of some of the other offerings that are part of your online presence right now, apart from the actual worship services.
Yeah, so we create a lot of our content for obviously adults, but then also our kids' curriculum matches with the are on the weekends. And so our Journey Kids team creates a separate video experience for kids that are kindergarten through fifth grade. So that's available for our families as well. And then we're offering prayer every morning at 9 a.m. Some of our pastors and spouses and leaders are leading that on Facebook Live. We're also offering some Wednesday night word That happens at 6 p.m. every Wednesday night. And so the prayer happens Monday through Friday every morning at 9. And then there are some various times where we'll do some live events on Facebook and or Instagram talking about the message from the weekend, or interviewing some of our pastors and ministry leaders. And there's been the mobile food pantry that we did at our Kenosha campus the last 2 weeks on Saturday at 10 o'clock. That's been shared via Facebook Live, that kind of a thing. This past week, we were able to serve over 3,000 people food, partnership with Feeding America and Love, Inc. here in Burlington, and also our disaster relief team as part of our church. And so we're trying to do just different things throughout the day at different times, and trying to figure out when people are available and when they want to engage. That's always the question, and that's going to change week to week, and we've noticed that. We also offer life groups. It's a small group of people that meet on a regular basis, and those are now all online through Zoom or Google Hangouts. And so we're still trying to take all of what we're doing on a regular basis, the weekend gatherings, our Journey Youth meets on Wednesday nights. They're doing their life groups through Zoom as well. And so we've tried to take everything that we do and keep it face-to-face through screens and through cameras as well, knowing we can't gather together. We're also going to be offering some of our previous messages this week for leading up to Easter. That'll be happening in the evenings as well. Our lead pastor is going to lead us all in a time of communion coming up this Friday. Him and his wife, Kevin and Jolene Taylor, they're going to lead that. And so we're just trying to find creative ways where we can still be the church. We can still encourage people because we know that this time will end, and we're going to be the church no matter what's happened. And all throughout history, the church has thrived in under adversity. And so we believe he's going to provide a way out of this. He's going to provide a cure, and we're going to make it through this. And I believe God wants to show us a lot of things in this. And so we just want to help people as we're walking day by day. And, you know, parents are now teachers, and people are working from home, and there's a lot of chances to be isolated. And so we want to connect people as much as possible.
It sounds like one of the legacies of Journey Church until even before all of this hit was that you already had a very vibrant online presence. And so I suspect the vast majority of your members are already well connected and to some extent technologically savvy. I mean, I think some faith communities, that's probably not maybe as much the case. And so they have to really think about those members, maybe older folks especially, that they really have to find other ways to reach out to, some old fashioned ways that have nothing to do with Zoom and Google Chat and so on. Is that a part of the equation for you, or is that not too much of a challenge?
I would say yes and no, because we are a multi-generational church, and Kenosha campus has been around a little over 80 years, and so there's a rich history. There's people that attend from all generations, and so that was one of the conversations that we had early on is, what about those people who aren't online? Because they're a part of our church and they need care. And so we started with phone calls to all of our people that were 60 and up, that were in that category of more susceptible to the virus. And so we started there. And then this past Friday, we finished up calling every single person that that is in our database that has been engaged recently. And so not just relying on technology, because you know, not everybody has the internet. Not everybody has access or is technologically inclined. And so we wanted to make sure that everyone got that personal touch. We prayed with people. We asked what needs they had, and did our best in all channels to connect. We did send out some letters as well. And so we tried to connect with every generation.
Very good. I noticed in the many offerings that you have online that one of them is called Mi Casa Su Casa, and I think it's something that's being offered up by your senior pastor and his wife, who's also a pastor with Journey Church, but it sounds like that's kind of a Q&A and a more of kind of a personal encounter that probably a lot of people appreciate, I should think.
Yeah, it is. Early on, we started with sharing a lot of encouragement and a lot of our messages. And one of the things that relationships with people offer is just kind of that, hey, how was your day? You know, what's going on in your life? And so it's really an effort to be more human, you know, and just, hey, this is our life. This is our home. This is where we're spending our quarantine time. And this is where we're having dinner. This is where, you know, this is where we may have had a disagreement, and you know what I mean? And so it's an opportunity just to be more relational. And I think sometimes people put pastors up on a pedestal, and we want to just say, hey, we're human just like you. We have the same challenges. We have the same frustrations, and we're going through this in a way that you are as well. Hmm. We're doing some of that on Instagram Live as well. Pastor Kevin did that last week with our next gen pastor, and just a Q&A with students. And so it gives us opportunity for multiple generations and multiple ages to connect in ways that actually we didn't always have before. Hmm. So it's opened up new avenues of connection. And it's one thing we found is because everything is digital now, there's no barriers location wise. Hmm. And so we can connect with anybody. And so we are one church in multiple campuses or multiple places, but what it's done, it's really unified us because we're all in the same space. We're all in our homes and we're all connecting together. So it's presented some pretty cool opportunities as the challenges.
Yeah, blurring some lines. A last quick question. What does it feel like to be the church during Holy Week with Easter right around the corner? What does it feel like to be celebrating such an important moment in the life of the Christian church under these really strange circumstances?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's something that none of us have ever encountered before in this sense. You know, Easter is the biggest weekend in our faith. And it's the time that we celebrate that the tomb is empty. Jesus is alive. And for me in my 39 years, I've always been at a gathering with people in a building, singing, hearing the word, reading the word, you know, hugging people, just everything that the church is when it gathers. And so it's been challenging, I think, and I said it a little bit earlier, that any time the church has faced any adversity or any persecution, it's forced us to look at our faith. What does our faith really depend on? Is it dependent on a building? Is it dependent on, is it solely focused on doing an activity? Or is it about a relationship? And it reminds me that, like the early church, there was persecution. There was things that they, tough times that they had to go through. I mean, all the apostles, all the saints, I mean, they died for their faith. And so when we put it in perspective, it's one of those things I think we can use to connect with the early church and the church fathers and some of the adversity they went through. This is nothing compared to what the persecution they went through, but it does give us a glimpse that what Jesus said. He said, in this world you will have trials, you will go through tough times, but he also said, I have overcome the world. And so it's a reminder that Jesus has overcome all of this. He's got a plan for this time. He's got a purpose for this time. And he can use this time to bring us closer to him. And I think he's stripping away some idols, some things we've placed above him. And I know he's done that in my own life, and I hope he does that in others as well, that the focus is on him. And that although we can't gather this Easter like we have in the past, we can still celebrate the resurrection. We can still celebrate that Jesus is alive, that we have hope, and that we can be saved. And so it opens up an opportunity to do it differently. But it also reminds us that things always change. But Jesus never changes.
Pastor Levi Kettleson serves the Burlington campus of Journey Church. I also want to thank Pastor Bradley Brown, Pastor Susan Patterson-Sumwalt, and Father Ricardo Martin for being part of today's morning show. Tomorrow on the morning show, We're going to be hearing from four different instructors here at Gateway Technical College about what it is like to teach in a virtual environment, teaching online versus in person. And we have representatives of several different academic disciplines here at Gateway, ranging from nursing to welding. And I hope that you'll tune in for that conversation tomorrow on the morning show. Support for the WGTD Morning Show comes from Jack and Drea, Kenosha's hometown store since 1911. They may be closed, but they have not lost their hometown spirit. Visit jackanddrea.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, and mugs. And don't forget Easter candy. They will be happy to ship it to you. Check it all out at jackanddrea.com.